This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Untek. To be a parent can be scary and incredibly stressful, but what if I told you that it is better to settle to be good enough rather than be perfect? My guest today, John Lewis, thinks just that and will be attempting to persuade you to. John is a marriage and family therapist as well as a co-author of the book Good Enough Parenting. John, thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting.
Can I get you to start by telling me about this concept of being a good enough parent?
Sure. Good enough parent was actually, the phrase was not actually coined by me. A very famous pediatrician in England in the 60s and 70s by the name of Dr. Winnicott. When he was on his duties in the hospital there, mothers would come to him with all kinds of questions, about perhaps breastfeeding, sleeping or scheduling and all that. And finally, he told all the parents at that point, look, you don't have to be a perfect parent. You just need to be good enough. And so from that point on, I think that phrase kind of went viral, quote unquote, to use the lingo that we today. Back then. And so everyone caught on to that. And so I was very drawn to that because, parenting is no easy task. And so when my wife and I, we wrote the book, we thought, well, maybe that's what we should call it, And so that's where the phrase originated from, good enough parent.
How did you come across Dr. Winnicott's work?
Oh, in my research. I am right now doing research with Stirling University in the UK, and we are, working on parenting issues. My wife and I, we've done lots of parenting research, I would say, over the last 20 years. And so, and also we're clinicians, we conduct marriage and family therapy for families that need it. And one of the things I realized is that, you can't be a perfect parent any more than you can be a perfect individual. And so at the same time, parents have to take being a parent seriously. So while on the one hand you can't be perfect, you can't on the other hand just rely on your own intuition. Because the problem with relying on your own intuition is that most people's intuition about what is right and wrong may not be right, may not be helpful to the kids. And so at the same time, we encourage parents to be trained. So while you can't be perfect on the one hand, we also encourage parents to be trained. And so we believe very much that parenting is something that all parents need to get trained in. And once you do, just strive towards being good enough.
The point that you make about intuition is interesting, because I was reading about Dr. Winnicott, and he believed in the in coining this when he was explaining the term good enough parent, that he believed in the idea of, quote, the sound instincts of a normal parent, unquote. So do you think this parenting advice industry is kind of undermining those sound instincts a little bit?
Well, I would say that a parent that really has more or less very, very good instincts, and by that I mean that they naturally know more or less, again, they're not perfect, but they naturally know more or less, when to hold, when to fold, when to react, when not to react, what to say, what not to say. But this is not within the normal population. I mean, only some people are blessed with that intuition, you see? And so most of us, therefore, need to get trained. And just like in any other fields, if you take, any field of where you need experts in, there are some people that are more blessed with their gifts. And it's just one of those things where they're naturally good at, and they will therefore have more affinity towards it. You see what I'm saying? But the rest of us need to get trained. And training makes a difference.
Do you think most parents are trained?
No, unfortunately. that's a sad state of affairs, because in our opinion, most parents today need some kind of a training. And I'll tell you why. A lot of parents today, they base their parenting skills or insights on what they saw growing up or what they experienced growing up. Perhaps they saw that in their own parents. And so many parents today, they use that as a blueprint for their own parenting. Now, on the other hand, you'll find another section of the population that overreacts to what they have experienced. You know, so for example, if they grew up in a very rigid and very strict environment, then they overreacted, and now they're extremely permissive with their kids. So you find parents that have either imitated what they've experienced, or you have parents today that have overreacted, and I think both are wrong. So therefore, you know, they need to get trained. They need to get trained.
That's very scary, isn't it? Is the damage done reversible?
Well, I'll tell you this. You know, I've read hundreds of literature, many, many books on parenting, done research, spoken to experts, and certainly have even talked to so many families that are hurting. The number one predictor to developmental outcomes in children from infancy all the way through to adulthood is parenting. And therefore, we've got to take parenting very, very seriously. You know, we even have a group of people today that believe that the number one predictor to outcome is school, what kind of school they go to. And that's not even true. School is far from being the main predictor. The main predictor is parenting. Now, if parenting is the number one predictor, then parents need to get trained. You see, but most parents think, well, you know what, as long as I provide them with the basics of, you know, if I bring home the bacon, they have enough food, clothes, and they go to school, then I've done my job. And that is so far from being the case. Parents have got to go more. And in our model of parenting, we talk about parents needing to meet the core emotional needs of children. And most parents don't even know what they are. And that takes a training. That takes you probably, you know, the need to unlearn what you've learned and to also learn new things because it's not easy. Now, if damage is done, it is reversible, but it is a lot more difficult. And I use the analogy of a renovation, you know, or a wet cement. If the child is young, I would say below 12 years old, and if you make mistakes, the cement is still fairly wet. You know, you can mold it around, you can shape it, reshape it. But if you wait for a long time, then the cement gets hard. And then you have to use all kinds of machines, and it is a lot of work. And so repair is still possible in the late adolescent stage or even in adulthood, but it's a lot more painful. It's a lot more difficult. So it's better to get trained and do it right, you know, as early as possible.
So you talk about, in your model, the children's core emotional needs as well as their parents' exasperated interactions with them. Can you elaborate on those these two concepts?
Yeah, sure. And I think this is one reason why parents need to get trained in, and that is we've come up with using empirical research and, you know, using samples from many parts of the world, that there are about 9 different ways in which parents exasperate their children. And these are things they have to take that will cause harm. It's related to emotional distress. It's related to, you know, all kinds of developmental outcomes, even personality disposition. And so if parents are trained, and they will then be able to avoid these kinds of interactions. So I'll give you an example. One of our parenting, in our parenting model, one of the exasperation interaction is called degradation and rejection. And this is about parents learning to not put down their kids, you know, calling them names, making them feel rejected, making them feel they have very little common sense, making them feel they have very little to contribute. And this is so unbelievably common. And even when I see people, adults, and ask them and trace the source of their pain or their present dysfunction, so much of it goes back to how their mother and their father treated them. And so this is one of those things. And degradation, rejection is probably the most harmful one. But there are others, parents who are who tend to be way, overly protective. That's also very harmful. Parents who are also very, very punitive. They punish the kids for every single mistakes that are made. What happens is if these interactions take place in their lifestyle, then you will cause the children to get exasperated because their core emotional needs are not met. In other words, these exasperation interactions, they are like roadblocks. They prevent the core emotional needs from entering. And so kids, when they don't get their core emotional needs met, over time, the way they look at themselves and the way they look at others become very, very distorted.
I'm speaking today to marriage and family therapist John Lewis about being a good enough parent. We'll talk more after a short break. Stay tuned on BFM 89.9. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Chua Eun-tik. My guest today is marriage and family therapist John Lewis, and we're talking about being a good enough parent. John, before we went into the break, you talked about how you've consumed a lot of research on parenting. When were you first interested in this topic, and why are you so passionate about this issue?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I actually, what really helped my wife and I take this very, very seriously, we saw the damage when we would meet up with families and, in therapy sessions. And we realized then that so much of the dysfunction that people experience as adults have roots when they were growing up. And basically, it all were related, or much of it was related, to how the parents treated them. And but the funny thing is that we live in a topsy-turvy world today because everyone is so crazy about putting their kids in the best schools and all that. And I think there's pluses to that. I think there are, schools do make a difference. But the thing is that schools are not the number one predictor. You meet with adults who have dysfunction. They don't usually come to me and say, I went to the school and my teacher really, really mistreated me. People forget how teachers were, at least most of us, but they never forget how their parents treated them. And so how parents treat them has a lasting impact. And in all my empirical research, I can tell you they related to all kinds of dysfunction. And so my wife and I saw that in multiple cases, and so we decided to dive in. And, another question that was posed to us is why do we need to invent another model? Aren't there other existing models? And the answer is there are. But as I was dealing with people in therapy, I realized that one of the key ingredients is to focus on the quality of relationship between parent and child. And in most of the programs that you see outside, they're about behavior modification. In other words, it's about how to help the behaviors to be modified. There are books on how to help children to not be so angry, how to help them be more disciplined, how to help them do better at school, etc. But I realized that through our research, that if the quality, and I emphasize the word quality, if the quality of relationship between the parent and a child is at a good place, then the parent will be able to pass down the good values to the kids. And often, because the quality of relationship is not there, there is a roadblock. So children don't listen. They rebel. They absolutely rebel because they feel in their hearts there's something missing. Here's my mom and dad. They're supposed to be close to me. They're supposed to take care of me. But when the parents are not there for them, but are just expecting them to shape up, most parents will go through a very, very difficult time doing that. So quality of relationship is of paramount importance, and most programs don't focus on that very much. And so we decided to embark on a research to see if that's really true. And when I compared my research with that done by others, I have to tell you, quality of parent relationship is probably the most important predictor to developmental outcomes in children.
But, you know, more children these days are growing up in families where both parents work. And so talk to me a little bit about this amount of time that parents can spare and whether or not spending quality time is an adequate substitute for not being able to spend as much time as they would like to because of their professional commitments.
Yeah, the issue is this, you know, time spending is a very crucial part, because when you spend time, you invest time, then you'll be able to get close to them. But unfortunately, if parents are not even trained to be a good enough parent, if parents are not even trained to meet the core emotional needs, then when you spend time with them, you're actually going to exasperate them. So an untrained parent that spends lots of time with their kids, it may not actually be beneficial, because they may spend their time nagging and exasperating them. What works is if parents are trained, and then they know what to do with their time, and then their relationship with the kids will get better, and you know, and that the core emotional needs will get met, and they'll get healthier. So it's while it's related to the amount of time you spend, but what you do during that time matters. So we encourage all parents, you need to get trained so that when you spend time with the kids, you don't exasperate them.
Do you think then untrained parents are raising a generation of emotionally underdeveloped and frustrated adults?
Yes, yes. And this is what happens, because now, again, we don't expect parents to be perfect. I mean, there will be days when, you know, either the father or mother will lose their cool and not handle the situation very well, okay? There may be times when they will lose their temper and may perhaps not make a decision that is in the interest of the child. That happens. But the point is this: in our model, you know, occasional mistakes are fine, but it should not be part of the lifestyle. The problem with a lot of families today is mistakes are made as part of their lifestyle. You know, and I'll give you an example. They go to school, they don't perform very well. The parents come and nag and nag and nag, call them names, put them down, impose restrictions. And you know, and what that does is, but at the same time, while they do all this, they don't spend quality time to convey to the kids how much they believe, how much they love them. And so this comes in the way of their development. And so parents don't understand that. I think a lot of them think if I nag and nag and nag, they'll get it. And some do. Some are able to make the cut. But most children, they grow up wounded, very, very wounded. And you see that because the way they view themselves is not very healthy, and they view others as also not being healthy. So meeting the core emotional needs are very, very important, because the sign of health is how you look at yourself. You look at yourself accurately, you look at others accurately, and so much of that comes down to the messages that they've heard about their parents about them. You know, a father who says you're nothing, you're useless, as part of their lifestyle growing up, they're going to end up believing in that. They're going to end up believing in the message from the two people in the world that loves them the most, the father and mother. And if that's what is said over and over again for 20 years, they're going to end up believing that. So as an adult, they will grow up believing that they are nothing, regardless of how much they accomplish. You know, when you talk to them very honestly or you have them fill up questionnaires, it'll come up again. And these are the kind of things that causes dysfunction down the road.
So nagging is scientifically proven to damage a child's emotional health?
If it is part of the lifestyle, and if it's very deviant in the sense that, you know, they call them, you know, there are a lot of put downs. You're stupid. You're an idiot. You know, you amount to nothing. And I would say those are fairly deviant words, you know, or deviant parenting styles. So they don't; those things don't help at all. And I've done empirical research in samples all over the world, East and West, And I can tell you, they correlate with dysfunction. Now, if the parent makes an occasional, gives an occasional reminder, and sometimes with kids we have to do that quite a lot, or if they end it, they get frustrated along the way, that's not as damaging. We're talking about real put-downs, which also is extremely, extremely common.
That was not quite the answer I was hoping for. So is this a model premise on the assumption that a nucleus family, where one with a father and a mother, is the best environment to raise a child?
Absolutely. The research has shown over and over again that the best environment that causes a child to turn out healthy is one where they live, where the child lives with the biological mother and with the biological father. Now, unfortunately, today, divorce is on the rise, and so most fathers, they pull the plug. And when separation takes place, the mothers are given the custody. And so single mothers, to those single mothers who are listening, I will also add this, that you have absolutely the ability to meet the core emotional needs single-handedly, but it's going to be harder for the first few years. You have to work harder. You have to, be there for them. But after a few years, it will settle down. So single mothers, don't give up hope, or single fathers, don't give up hope. But the best environment for kids is to live with both fathers and mothers. And in one of my research, I've come to the conclusion that fathers cannot even be absent. You know, a lot of people today, they believe in this myth that mothers are more important than fathers. But in my research, I can tell you that fathers are just as important as mothers. Fathers have to be there. Fathers have to play with kids, especially with the younger kids. Fathers have to interact. And, all of this adds and contribute to the outcome.
What about kids who spend the majority of their early years with nannies or extended families? So the primary caregiver or the secondary caregiver could be undoing the work that the parents are trying to do with their kids?
Well, nobody knows the answer to this, but it's one of those peculiarities, if you like, that is in us as human beings, and that is we have to get attached to our biological parents. And this is something that's been proven over and over and over again. And if we have substitutes, it may work. If, for example, the primary caregiver is very, very nurturing, and they're able to meet the core emotional needs well, but there is something about the biological parents doing that that just makes a difference, and no one knows really why. And this is why, in many cases, when parents adopt a child, you find that the adopted child more often than not will encounter or experience a lot of problems in their teenage years compared to their biological kids. Mm-hmm. You know, even though the parents would swear and say, "Look, I've treated all of them equally. I love them just as much," and I've seen that case over and over again. And that's just a reflection that biological parents and, just makes a difference. And so, but obviously in some extreme cases, you can't have that. Some fathers or parents, they do die, prematurely, or they get separated for whatever reason. But I think even then, don't give up hope. While damage is already done, you can still strive and meet the core emotional needs. So I think the main thing is you got to meet the core emotional needs, ideally by biological parents, but if not, by another nurturing primary caregiver.
Boarding school at too early an age is not a good idea then?
You asked my opinion. I went to boarding school when I was 15 in the UK. And I saw so much of what I'm uncovering right now today. I remember now thinking, oh my goodness, no wonder so-and-so behaved this way. Oh, no wonder so-and-so behaved this way. I personally, as a parent, I would advise against that. I don't think many parents who send their kids to boarding school are aware that their presence you know, as biological parents are that crucial. And I think these are parents that put too much premium on education. And we have so many parents that do that. You know, the education is the number one thing. And I tell parents education is important, but the number one thing is you have to parent them well. That has to be first and foremost. That takes training, just like any other areas. So, you know, of course, in extreme cases, you know, if you lose both your parents, then what do you do? I think boarding school has a place, but it's certainly not what I would recommend as a first choice.
You and your wife pioneered this thing called a movie therapy. How does that work?
When you talk about, say, for example, exasperating children, you know, I can go behind the podium and explain to them, you know, about put downs and all that. But nothing is as convincing as if I showed them a movie scene of a parent doing that to their kids. And movies have a tremendous impact on people. In fact, there's no culture I know in the world that does not like movies. And so when I find the right movie scene and I put it in there, you know, it's funny. You know, all of a sudden, you get their attention. They really, really get absorbed into that scene. And all that does is it helps them to be open to new ways of parenting. So movies are extremely, extremely powerful. So we use that for that reason. So at the same time, what is difficult is that you have to get copyright permission from the producers to be able to show those relevant movies. But that, and that's something we work very hard. So all the movies that we show have gotten you know, full copyright permission from the producers. But it's very, very powerful.
Are you able to share a title or two of a movie that shows what good enough parenting is?
You know, there's a movie that was done. It's a true story. A lot of the movies that I show are based on true stories. There's one called The Prize Winner of Defiance, Ohio. It's a strange title. but it's about a mother who raised 10 children. All by herself, because her spouse or the father was very, very irresponsible. He was there. He didn't abandon them physically, but he was, you know, very irresponsible emotionally. And he never even provided for the family very much. But what she did was she just had to work as a single mom. And the thing is that she was blessed with a lot of good intuition. So she knew how to handle the kids. And, you know, the whole story is about how she handled all those you know, twists and turns that the entire family faced growing up. And she did an incredibly marvelous job. And so you see a lot of positive examples. The other thing I'd like to add is this: in Good Enough Parenting, we don't just talk about eliminating the negatives. We also talk about practicing the positives. And in my research, what I found is that positive interactions between parent and child contributes uniquely to their developmental outcome. In other words, it's not dependent entirely on eliminating negative. In other words, if I weaken exasperation, that does not mean I'm now positive. So let's say, for example, at home, I stop calling my kids names. That's good. I've done part one, which is what? To eliminate the negative. But now I have to replace that with being positive. But in a lot of Asian homes, parents are kind of quiet. So there may not be a lot of exasperation interactions, but they're really, really quiet. And at dinner times, they don't even talk. You know, the most common words that come out of the parents is, you know, would you like more rice? Would you like, you know, would you want to try this? Or how was your day? And that's it. And there's very little positive interactions. But what my research has shown is in a healthy family, you've got to do both. Eliminate the negatives, and you have to then enhance the positive interactions. And the two of them are separate, and they both contribute uniquely to their developmental, you know, to the overall development.
So you will be speaking at a three-day parenting workshop from October 20th to the 22nd, organized by Hope Worldwide Malaysia. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the topics that you'll be presenting?
absolutely. My wife and I will be co-teaching it, actually. We're both co-developers of this program. And what we're going to do is on day one, we're going to walk through them, walk through the exasperation interactions. In other words, these are the kind of interaction you should avoid. You know, we're going to encourage them to eliminate them or bring them to a bare minimum. Again, we can't be perfect, but we can be good enough. And then we're also going to talk about some positive interactions between parent and child. You know, what are some things you got to make sure this takes place. Again, not just occasionally, but in your lifestyle. Because a lot of families, what they do is they encourage their parents only, their kids only on their birthdays, you know, or on special festive seasons. But we're talking here about being very positive and nurturing them as part of your lifestyle. So that's what we're going to do in the first day. And then in the following days, we're going to talk about how to meet each one of the core emotional needs. We have five altogether. And so the first one, not surprisingly, is connection and acceptance. How to meet the core emotional need for connection and acceptance. Again, it's about the quality of relationship between parent and child. So we'll walk them through with some practicals. We show some movie scenes until parents really, you know, they're able to grasp it. Then we'll go with the second core emotional need and so on. But the point is that the exasperation interaction is what causes the core emotional needs to not be met, whereas the positive interaction is what causes the core emotional needs to be met. So, you know, again, it takes training. And I think through the use of movie scenes, explanation, examples, our own experiences, hopefully parents will get a better and a deeper understanding of these concepts.
John Lewis, thank you very much for speaking to me today.
Thank you for inviting.
For more information about John and Karen's upcoming presentation in Malaysia, do go on to Hope Worldwide Malaysia's website at www.hope.org.my. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.